A new brewery opens almost every day in the U.S., and a new Gallup poll shows Americans prefer beer over wine, with craft beer enjoying double-digit gains in popularity. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we ask Iowa beer experts, what's behind the boom in craft beers? We'll talk about the growth of Iowa breweries and their impact on the state's economy. Millstream, Madhouse, Toppling Goliath, Peachtree, and more. Has your taste for beer changed in recent years? Tell us why. The Iowa craft beer boom, after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Beer is booming in Iowa and elsewhere in the U.S. Last year, nearly one new brewery opened each day in the United States. That's the sharpest spike since the end of Prohibition. Beer is the favorite alcoholic drink among Americans, more popular than wine and much more popular than liquor. The majority of men go for beers, as do the biggest portion of drinkers under the age of 54 and those from the Midwest. Though beer shipments actually slumped last year in 2011, much of the weakness has been in the major brands, companies such as Anheuser-Busch, Heineken USA. Craft beer varieties, on the other hand, have enjoyed double-digit gains, and this amid the growth of beer gardens and a new consumer focus on premium brews. Well, this hour we invited several beer experts here in Iowa to give us their perspectives on the growth of beer, breweries, its impact on the state's economy, and also, of course, some discussion about beer brewing and tasting. River to River listeners, we want you to join in our conversation this hour. Has your taste in beer changed in recent years? How? Have you become a craft beer drinker, as so many have? And what do you think is behind this boom in craft beers, microbreweries, or any questions you might have about the beer business, or simply questions about how we do this process of brewing beer, which has been going on for thousands of years? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us, first of all, in our Des Moines studio, Megan McKay-Ziller. She is co-owner of the Peachtree Brewing in Knoxville. That's a brewery in Knoxville, Iowa. And also, Megan represents Iowa breweries on the Iowa Wine and Beer Promotion Board. Megan, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me here.
Also joining us in this first half hour by phone, Eric Sorensen, Vice President and Treasurer of the Iowa Brewers Guild, also regional brewmaster at Rock Bottom Brewery in West Des Moines. Eric, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Megan, let me start off with you. Give us some more details on the growth of beer in Iowa and the country.
Sure. You know, I think specifically in Iowa, we've seen a really big boom. We opened our brewery in 2009, and at the same time, Madhouse opened their brewery. This year, I think we've got five breweries slated to open. We've seen good expansions by Millstream, Great River, and some of the other breweries as well. So it's just been really fun to watch that happen. I think we're seeing consumers, you know, get excited about it and seeing some good local options. Some of that probably spurred a little bit by the change in law for the alcohol limit that we had here in Iowa, and that was raised, and so I think we've been able to make some styles that are mm-hmm. creating some excitement in the market.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that law a little bit later, but when did the people who pay attention to beer first notice this increase specifically in craft brews, the interest there? Eric, can I hand that to you?
Sure. You mean in the state generally or in the country?
Well, to the extent that it's in the state and to the extent that the state is different than the country, perhaps if there is a difference, tell us about that as well. When did we see this uptick in interest for beers that were not, I don't know how we categorize them, traditional large brewery beers?
Well, really the taste for these beers has been around, as you say, have said, for centuries. There have been a number of different beer styles from across the world have been brewed, but in the modern period since Prohibition, after Prohibition, of course, we saw a steep decline in the number of breweries operating, and it was in the 70s when an Iowan, Fritz Maytag, purchased Anchor Steam Brewery. Actually, he purchased that back in the 60s, but in the late 70s, there was another brewery that started up in California. And then we saw, you know, the rise of full-flavored beers and the craft beer movement. So that was kind of the start of it. And I've been brewing since the early 90s. And we've gone through two kind of waves of real growth in the number of breweries. And I think we're now seeing a really big growth. And the change in Iowa has occurred in the last 10 years, I think, is the majority of it. It's we've got quite a number of breweries that are celebrating their 15th anniversary, including ours at Rock Bottom.
How many breweries do we have now in Iowa?
I think we've got a count of around 23. And that becomes difficult. I as the treasurer, I get the membership, but there, we've got some breweries that might not be participating fully as members of the Brewers Guild. We've also got a number of nano breweries, very, very small breweries, 5-gallon or 10-gallon at a time, that have started up and are a little bit under the radar.
Mm. Even at those volumes, 5 or 10 gallons, they still brew their beer to be commercially sold.
Yes, correct.
Hmm, interesting. Megan, tell us more about the law change, because you said that has not something to do with the more recent uptick in these craft brews. They have a slightly higher alcohol content, and you're saying that they were allowed to grow, their market allowed to grow because of a law change. Tell us about that.
Sure. Prior to 2010, Iowa breweries couldn't brew any beer over 6.25 alcohol by volume. And what that did was effectively limit the number of styles that Iowa breweries could make. It wasn't that the beer, that type of beer, wasn't available in the state. Breweries from outside could actually produce it and ship it into the state. It went through the Iowa Alcoholic Beverages Division. It was kind of considered as liquor. So it was also had a more difficult distribution process at that time. When that law changed, we were able to start brewing anything up to 15%. And it just opened up the styles. It's not that we want to go out and make bold beers at all times, but a lot of your Belgian-style beers, some of the double IPAs, the things that are, you know, gaining people's attention and creating some excitement in the market are now available for Iowa brewers to be able to do. And so I think what happened is the breweries got excited. You know, brewers love to be able to be creative and make beers that don't fit right into the neat little boxes. And so they were able to start brewing some different things. And I think you saw consumers kind of look around and go, oh, you know, Iowa breweries can do some cool, interesting, fun things that we hadn't been able to do before, that we were limited on before. It also opened up for more out-of-state breweries to want to come into Iowa, which sounds like it might be a bad thing from competition, but really craft beer, you know, we're at 5 or 6% market share total in the U.S. In Iowa, it's only about 2% market share. So really that extra influx of new styles and new beers, I think, has done more to just educate the consumer, create excitement than add competition.
Megan, can you draw a direct line, a direct correlation between that law change in 2010 and 23 breweries, if Eric's estimate is right, 23 breweries being opening in Iowa and more opening as the years progress? Is there a direct relation between those two, that we have this number of new breweries because of that law change?
I would have to say that, you know, as people were looking about it, if they were looking at starting a brewery in Iowa or somewhere else, Iowa became much more attractive after that law changed. You know, I haven't talked to any of them specifically to see if that directly impacted them. But I know for us, you know, we opened right about the same time, which was just kind of accidental. But it certainly has made a huge difference in the type of business that we're able to run.
Eric, on that question, did you have anything to say?
Sure. Basically, when Prohibition was repealed, brewers were allowed to brew, before full Prohibition was repealed, brewers were allowed to brew beer at 3.2, which was the minimum that they could do without adding extra ingredients in order to preserve the flavors. We've got beers now that are lower than 3.2, but they've got extra preservatives in them to keep them safe. And so people became used to this lower level of session beers, which is great for everyday drinking. But for breweries that want to produce unpasteurized and unfiltered beers, the higher alcohol level allows for a beer that's able to age with greater potential or less potential for having a infection or spoilage. And so you're able to ship it further. You're able to do it with less equipment. And it's a lot easier to gain entree into the market.
Mm-hmm. Is 3.2 beer, did that become sort of a trademark American beer, whereas Europeans never had this going down to 3.2, that beers, if we talk about the old world, that beers would have been in the 6 or 7% range?
Well, the German Bierstoßgesetz, which is the law that sets forth what people commonly think of as German beer purity, actually delineated four different types of beer or four different alcohol levels. And there were gaps in there, but there was a low alcohol beer that they were allowed to produce. There's always been what's called table beer. Sometimes, you know, beer for just the farmhands or beer for the children at the table that's been produced in the old world.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us, as a brewmaster, Eric Sorensen, can you give us a quick idea of how beer comes to be, how beer is brewed, and then fit the alcohol content in there?
Sure. The main thing with any alcoholic beverage is sugar. Yeast converts sugar into carbon dioxide and alcohol. And so what we do as brewers is we take barley for the most part. Barley, because it's got the husk on it, and it is able to not clump up when we make a mash. So the barley is taken to the malt house. It's allowed to germinate, which is the malting process, and then it's kilned and dried so that we can store it. The malting process allows enzymes in the grain to convert starch into sugar.
Mm.
So now we can bring the malt into the brew house. We can mill it. Then going to add hot water to it. The temperature of the water determines what kind of enzymes are released, what kinds of sugars are released. And then we're going to rinse all that sugar out and create something called wort, which is a sugar solution. We're going to add hops. Probably about three times, the first time for bittering, the second time for flavor, and the last for aroma to the boil kettle as we boil it. Now, boiling was the thing about beer that made it safe and sanitary for everyone to drink. So it was the beer of everyone during the Dark Ages. You couldn't drink the water. Hops act as a preservative. They also act as a bittering agent to kind of counterbalance some of the sweetness that's left over after fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
Once we're done boiling it, we're going to chill it down, add the yeast to it, allow the yeast to work. Lagers will act at a lower temperature for a longer period of time. Ales, a shorter period of time at a higher temperature. Ales typically are more fruity because the yeast will create these kind of fruit flavors or esters. And then, you know, usually after about 4 days for an ale and 7 days for a lager, we've got fermentation complete. We're going to go through warm maturation and then cold aging. The yeast is going to go to sleep, fall to the bottom. We may clarify the beer using a filter or using fining agents. And then it's pretty much ready to serve. So, you know, from 10 days from brewing to, you know, maybe, you know, depending on the beer, it might take years. For some beers to come into full maturation.
You gave us the short version there, Eric. I know, and it can be a very complicated chemical process. I know there are, because I've interviewed at least one of them in the world, a doctor of beer, actually held from a university in Berlin, a doctorate in it. So it can be quite complicated what's going on in this process. Megan, I want to ask you about this trend towards IPAs, hoppy beers, because I know Peachtree Brewing in Knoxville specialize in a very hopped up beer. Describe the taste of an IPA or what we know as an Indian pale ale.
Sure. I think there's a couple things that you're going to get out of a good IPA. The first thing is obviously the hops are going to add some bitterness to it. So a lot of people, they'll find that kind of bitter, astringent taste on their tongue. It's a great, you know, cleansing agent. If you want that sort of thing, it pairs well with spicy foods. The other thing, you know, and the thing that drew me to IPAs and got me started drinking them is really that hop aroma. You'll have a very herbal aroma, and it's sometimes got some citrus and those sorts of things to it. You can also get some piney aromas out of it if it's, you know, depending on the kind of hops that you're using. I was listening to a seminar yesterday, actually, and IPAs are this year, for certain, the top-selling beer style in the United States, which is kind of interesting. In the past, it had been seasonals and some other types of, you know, pale ales and those sorts of things. So we're really seeing people getting more and more excited about those very full-flavored, sometimes bitter and very full of aroma beers.
I wonder, is there a way to account for the relatively sudden appeal of very hoppy beers? Because I think most people, when they taste a very hoppy beer, if they haven't had them before, do not immediately like them, or do they?
You know, I find that really interesting. It wasn't my favorite style to begin with, but it's fun to watch people come into our tap room at Peachtree, and, you know, we'll have them kind of go through the sampling range. And there's some people where immediately that's the beer that they're drawn to, even if they really haven't had them before. It's just what their palate really likes and accepts. And then for other people, you know, it takes a little longer. It's better maybe paired with foods, or they kind of learn how to drink it with different things that make it more appealing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it just depends on personal preference.
I heard, and I don't know if it's a rumor or any basis at all scientifically for it, Megan, can you tell me, is there any difference in liking hoppy beers or not between males and females?
You know, I think that's passed around a lot. I'm not sure that there is any scientific basis. Eric, you might know more about that than I do. I am often surprised, though, that there are a lot of women who come in and really like the hoppy beers. I think sometimes they stay away from them because they think they won't, or they've heard about it. You know, they are forward and aggressive beers, and so I think sometimes psychologically we steer away from them, but it's actually a pretty pleasant taste for most people.
Eric, did you have anything on the gender and hoppiness to contribute?
You know, I've actually seen exactly the opposite. So having been a social scientist and by training, I'm not willing to say anything conclusively because I don't have a large enough sample size. From all the data that I've seen or anything that I've read, there's no gender inequality. Basically, most people can't taste hops below what we call 17 IBUs or international bittering units. However, the colder a beer is, the more you're going to taste that bitterness. There's an upper limit on how much we can usually taste, and that's about 65. At that point, your body usually has kind of a gag reflex to keep poisons out. However, I've seen that limit stretch. So, and you can't taste anything over 100 IBUs. So you'll see beers that are trumpeted as being over 100 IBUs. You're not actually going to be able to taste that. Your taste buds shut down. But that you can train your taste buds. I know people that come in and, you know, they used to drinking, you know, very light lagers, and within a year they're drinking IPAs, and within a year and a half they're drinking double IPAs.
So much interest, so much appeal of hoppy beers, I understand, Megan, that there can at times be hops shortages.
Yeah, I think we've seen that a few years ago. There were some pretty major hop shortages, especially in certain varieties. This year, I know there's been, you know, some concerns for different brewers based on the particular varieties that they want, especially the aroma hops. If you haven't had a contract in place and kind of pre-ordered what you wanted last year, it may be difficult to find what you need. And I think,
right,
you know, brewers, as they're maturing and their businesses are getting smarter about forward contracting and letting their suppliers know what they need.
How many types of hops are there? Hundreds?
Eric, I'm going to let you answer that one.
Yeah, there really are. The thing about hops is there may be named varieties. It's a lot like wine grapes, and we're well aware of this because of Robert Mondavi, that, you know, there are different varieties of grapes, but just as the French acknowledge there's terroir, or there's the local area in which hops are grown. So you may have a hop that tastes a certain way from a certain hop yard, but if you're 100 miles away or maybe even 20 miles away, the hop may taste very different. So when we go to select hops in Yakima, Washington, and we rubbed the hops, we noticed differences from different lots.
Mm.
You can actually see some of the German hop merchants taking bets on which variety we're going to pick up or which yard we're going to pick up because they know what we like or what our house styles are.
Eric Sorensen is the vice president and treasurer of the Iowa Brewers Guild. Megan McKay Ziller represents Iowa breweries on the Iowa Wine and Beer Promotion Board. We're talking this hour about the uptick, quite a dramatic uptick in the interest in beer, especially in what we call craft beers. And how are we defining those, Megan? Craft beers are?
Craft breweries are typically designated as anybody producing under 6 million barrels.
Okay, so it has nothing to do with the style of the beer, simply the size of the brewery.
No, it's also that they're just using water, malt, yeast, and hops, and not adding a lot of other adjuncts or anything like that.
I'd like to get your statements, your views on what, if any, impact this has had on the Iowa economy. The fact that we have, what I'm hearing, more people drinking local beer, so that has to be good instead of and probably. Not drinking or drinking less beer from outside the state. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, I think it's definitely had a positive impact. Anytime you can get people drinking local products, it starts to create jobs. It starts to create other add-on industries around that. I think, you know, in Iowa, we've got the growth of the Iowa breweries, which are adding jobs. It's adding to the tax base. It's adding to things like, you know, T-shirt sales that we're buying from local suppliers. It's adding to other ancillary products, food sales, those sorts of things.
It seems to tie into the local food movement as well, doesn't it?
It sure does. That's one of the things that, you know, we say drink local, think globally. I buy my honey from a local honey producer. I'll buy my oats and my barley. My raw wheat from a local place. We actually have grain millers up in St. Ansgar's. We'll get milled grains from them. So we try to stay as local as we can. And I'll even use adjuncts. That we normally think of large breweries doing, but they're actually something that some of the European brewers will do to add different flavors to the beer. So that's one of the definitions of craft beers. You know, we're using adjuncts to add flavor. So I might use corn for an American twist on a Belgian-style beer, whereas a large brewery might have used it in the past because it was less expensive to produce.
We have just a few seconds left. Can we in the United States, I know the Germans have their German purity laws, but can we make beer out of pretty much any grain we want to here in the U.S. and still call it beer, Eric?
There's an amount of barley that we have to use, and that's about it.
Okay.
So we can use a lot of other grains.
Okay, very good. Eric Sorensen and Megan McKay-Ziller will be with us after we take a short break as well. We'll welcome a couple of other guests. We'd like to hear your opinion. Has your taste in beer changed in recent years? Have you become a craft beer drinker? What do you think is behind this boom in craft beers, microbreweries? What other questions do you have about the beer business or about brewing beer? 1-866-780-9100. rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, or give us a tweet at IPR Talk. Back with more about the craft beer boom in Iowa on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Wonderful to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today we're talking about the fact that beer is booming in Iowa, also elsewhere in the United States. Last year, nearly one new brewery opened each day in the U.S., and that's the sharpest spike since the end of Prohibition. The craft beer varieties have enjoyed double-digit gains, also amid the growth of beer gardens, new consumer focus on these premium brews. So this hour, we've invited several beer experts in Iowa to give us their perspectives on the growth of beer, breweries, its impact on the state's economy, and also, of course, some discussion about beer brewing and tasting. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Joining us, Megan McKay Ziller, co-owner of Peachtree Brewing in Knoxville. She also represents Iowa breweries on the Iowa Wine and Beer Promotion Board. Eric Sorensen with us as well, vice president and treasurer of the Iowa Brewers Guild, regional brewmaster at Rock Bottom Brewery in West Des Moines. We want to go to a call here in just a moment, but here's a Facebook comment that you'll be interested in, Megan. Here in Knoxville, Peachtree Brewing has also become a great place to gather with friends and meet many people from out of town. It's a great music scene. Fun to see locals, so many from out of town gathering for great beer. That from Robert on our Facebook page. Let's go to Earl. Earl in West Des Moines, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, have you had your beer tastes change in recent years?
Oh, tremendously, yeah. It started with a couple of trips to Germany about 10 or 15 years ago. It was the first time I had ever had anything other than the two big American lagers that are sold over here, and I immediately fell in love. It was a Franz Wiskanner wheat beer, and since then, anytime I have a chance to try a new beer, I do that, and I especially like the smaller craft brews. Rock Bottom and Granite City, I think, have great choices, and I think for me, it's the complexity and the variety that I enjoy experiencing, even if it's a beer like an IPA that I don't really care for. I still try them anyway. I went to a beer fest up in St. Paul with my son-in-law about a month ago, and it was terrific. They had about 100 or 120 craft brewers from around the United States, really, but most of them from the upper Midwest, and it was just great to be able to go around and try such a wide variety of beers. But I just enjoy the variety and the complexity, and it's amazing where you can find something that is just a completely different drinking experience. And I'm not concerned with getting a buzz on. I'm more interested in a good, flavorful beer, almost a meal in a glass, if you know what I mean.
Well, interesting you should mention that. I wonder, one of the questions I have is, Earl, you in particular, do you find that you drink more or less beer than you did when you were back with the traditional breweries?
I probably drink less, and I'm 61. When I was younger, like a lot of young kids, you know, part of the reason I drank was to get a buzz on. I would rather not get any kind of buzz at all, but be able to drink more beer just because of the enjoyment, like you would sit down and enjoy a good meal. So for me, it's not at all about the alcoholic content, but rather the interesting textures and complexities of the beers.
Right. Megan, that's an interesting comment, too, because, of course, we want to always be promoting responsible drinking in moderation. But I wonder if you had anything to say about the quantities people drink with craft beers compared to earlier times.
Well, I think Earl's right on with that. You know, people are sitting around and enjoying them. It's a conversational beverage. It's not something that you're just, you know, sitting down with a six-pack and taking care of it in one evening. People enjoy them a little more slowly, and they really are enjoying that flavor. And I think a lot of times enjoying them with food, which you see a lot with wine, and we're starting to see more and more with beer.
Mm-hmm. Earl in West Des Moines, thank you for your call. Earl dialed 1-866-780-9100. I want to introduce Bill Heinrich. He is the head brewer at Red's Ale House in North Liberty. Bill is in our Iowa City studio. Welcome to our program.
Good afternoon.
You've been listening to our program thus far. Tell us about your ale house. People in eastern Iowa often are aware of Red's Ale House, made quite a mark in eastern Iowa in terms of providing craft brews to the area. How does your establishment fit into the trend of craft beer you've been listening about?
I feel like that we have been focusing pretty strongly on craft beer for, well, since we opened. Before the alcohol law changed, we were still promoting the craft beers that we could get and the imports that we were able to get. And since then, we have, and since the availability of beer has increased, we've been able to really handpick the beers that we want to showcase.
How many do you have on tap at any one time, do you think?
We run 18 and then roughly 150 bottles. And those generally tend to be the best of what we can get a hold of.
And how do you select those personally in conjunction with other people? How do you select the beers?
I do select them with some of the other management staff. And we pick them based on keeping a wide variety of styles. We keep the beers that we want to drink on. And I feel like that is the best way to really educate people is that if you enjoy a beer, you are much more able to talk about it with your customers and with people in general than with something that maybe you're less enthusiastic about.
Do you pay attention? How much do you pay attention to where the beer is brewed? If it's an Iowa brew or perhaps Michigan brew?
We do actually pay quite a bit of attention. There is a premium, at least in our case, anecdotally and for Reds, there is a benefit to being brewed in Iowa for the consumer. But that being said, as with any beer, it does, you know, we do tend to make sure that it meets our expectations for quality. But we do a lot of work. Peachtree is a good example. We do a lot of work with Peachtree, Toppling Goliath and Millstream also.
Toppling Goliath in Decorah?
Yes.
Millstream in the Amanas?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had very, very good success with their beers, enjoy them. And so having lots of Iowa options now, or having more Iowa options than we did before, has proven to be pretty beneficial to the restaurant.
You have future plans. You hope to be brewing and selling your own beer in a few months' time. Where are you in that process of developing your own brew house?
Well, we started our project as an expansion to Reds. It became kind of an entity unto itself, and so now we are expanding or are starting that project in Solon, where we purchased Jonesy's, which is an Eastern Iowa landmark, and we will develop that into our brew pub. Ideally, sooner rather than later. Timelines are a little flexible, of course, but yeah, that's our next step in the project.
What types of beer? What are you paying most attention to in the development of your own beer? What do you put as the critical things to watch out for?
It's always about quality. In terms of styles, you know, of course, IPAs are very hot. We enjoy them. Pale ales, stouts are big right now too. That being the case, it always has to be quality first, and that's the same mentality that we've taken at the restaurant with the food side, the service, and the beers is what we want to take to the brew pub to focus and really focus on the quality of the product that we're putting out.
That is Bill Heinrich, if you just tuned in. He's a head brewer at Red's Ale House in North Liberty. Joining us also, Arian Schussler. He's co-owner of Mason City Brewing, joining us, I assume, from Mason City. Arian, welcome.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. You are in the process, I understand, of becoming a brewery. You are not active yet?
No, we're not actively brewing yet. We have began the application process for all the permits necessary for us to begin brewing, and we've leased a location. So we're just waiting.
Okay, so you're looking, you're scoping out a location. What are you going to be focusing on once you get a little further on in the process?
Well, I tell you, you know, it's about, we're going to have a small brewery here, a nano brewery that was described in the first half of the segment by Eric, the smallest of breweries. We'll produce one barrel batches to begin with, and we'll do those back-to-back. So we'll basically be producing about 64 gallons of beer a day in a brew day. We'll serve that beer to our local market. Our goal is just to serve initially in our tap room to people, and we plan on also offering kegs to local bars and restaurants.
How do you know that the climate is ripe or ready for this in Mason City? Was there a clamor for these microbreweries, nanobreweries to pop up? How did you sense that the time is right?
Well, I think so. I guess one of the big indicators we had is we began planning just last winter the idea. We were home brewers, and we decided, well, what would it take to open up a small-scale brewery in Mason City? And we started looking at all the legalities involved. And what we did is we launched a campaign on Kickstarter.com, which is a website where it's a crowdsourcing website where people can support creative projects or businesses that they want to see succeed. So what we basically did is we left it up to the people of Mason City in North Iowa that if we reached our fundraising goal, that we would make it happen here. And what we the response we got really surprised us. We raised $23,500 and from 210 backers in 60 days, and I think that really speaks to the demand in our area. These are people that want this sort of establishment to open here, and they're excited to see it happen.
So you feel you have a nice clientele just waiting for you to get further on down the line and brew those first batches?
Oh, yeah, we're really seeing a great response. We've got 800 fans on Facebook. We have people stopping us in the streets, telling us, asking, wanting to know the status of the project. It's really exciting.
Do you have an idea of what your sales, what you aim for in terms of sales opening up?
Like I say, we're just going to produce in small batches, beer brewed in small batches, so our sales will match like how many days a week we're willing to brew. We're looking at producing only 200 barrels in our first year, and that averages out to be about 8 full-size kegs in a week. Hmm. So it's a very small-scale operation.
Arian Schussler, the owner of Mason City Brewing. Good luck with that. Let's go to our phones. Hang on there, Arian, too. We may want to get back to you. Ken is one of our listeners joining us from Illinois. Hi, Ken. Welcome to our program.
Hello?
Yes, Ken, you're on the air. Go ahead. A little bit of noise behind you. If you have something on, please turn it down.
Yeah, I'll turn down the radio here. That's what I just, I'm all excited about the enthusiasm, the interest in micro breweries that's been developing over the last few years. I was stationed in Germany for 2.5 years in Mainz along the Rhine River, so it's just remarkable how many different wineries around there, different kinds of wines, you know, mainly the white ones, but like it was the same thing for the beers. Is you had every little community would have at least one, maybe two or three different beer breweries, and I love to spread the gospel of excellent beers, and I'm often known for bringing several varieties of beers. Like later today, I'll be hooking up with some buddies, and I've got some Peronis here on ice, and I've got Barsteiner Dunkel. I kind of like the darker beers. I got St. Pauli Girl Special Dark. So
perhaps on one or other another occasion, you've been called a beer snob, Ken.
yeah, I guess that's what, I've had some people question whether I was or not, and a buddy of mine, we have up on a shelf every beer that we've ever sampled, and that's like Chinese, Japanese, Belgians, and Czech beers, and, you know, so, like I'm saying, to me, to go sit in a bar and pay $2.50 for, or $3 for, you know, domestic beers is just, well, it's not conducive to having a good time.
Okay, thank you, Ken, for joining us from Illinois. Bill Heinrich, you wanted to jump in here with a comment.
Yeah, I think Ken and Arian both come at this, or they both represent two very important sides to the consumer base in Iowa. You have people who have been exposed to a foreign beer culture and want to see more of that from their local breweries in their local communities. And Arian comes from the homebrewing background where you have people who are, and I will admit I come from that background too, you have people who are involved in the industry and want to be a part of it and want to be active members in it. And that's not just opening a brewery, but it's also actively seeking out new brands, new styles, new breweries that have opened and being a part of them through your interaction in the market.
Eric Sorensen, I wonder if you can tell me if this uptick in interest in microbreweries, nanobreweries, has also a corresponding uptick in the number of people who are brewing at home.
Oh, I'm sure there is. I'm constantly seeing folks come in and asking questions and talking about what they're doing at home and what they're brewing at home. It's, like you said, back to the slow food movement, folks wanting to be producing their own, wanting to have something with more flavor and, you know, perhaps not consuming quite as much, but consuming something that is better as they perceive it.
Chris is joining us on the line. Chris is from Millstream Brewing Company. Welcome, Chris. What's your last name?
Preeby.
Chris Preeby, welcome to our program. And you had something to add to our discussion. You're the head brewer there, I believe.
Yep. One of the things I wanted to mention was been listening to your show that you were talking about the economic impact this has on Iowa. A lot of people are moving to Iowa from either coast, both because the cost of living is lower and the standard of living is actually higher now. And one of the reasons for the improved living conditions is the beer, because these people are coming from environments that have traditionally had a huge number and a wide variety of both craft beers and imported beers. And now Iowa is seeing that. A lot of people appreciate that.
Now, I know Chris, Millstream Brewing has been in the local brewing business longer than most of the breweries in Iowa. How long have you been around?
Millstream has been around since 1985. I actually started at the old Dubuque Starbrewery before they closed in 1993. They closed in 98. So I've seen I've gone from asking people at restaurants or bars for a craft beer and them and they looking at me funny, you know, not knowing what I'm talking about, to
right.
just, and especially just in like the last 4 years, it's just exploded. And we used to have to, you know, fight tooth and nail for taps, and now it's done a complete turnaround where we can barely keep up with the demand.
Chris at Millstream Brewing, thank you for your perspective this hour.
Yep.
Megan, before we go, I wanted to get into another aspect of business. People perhaps thinking of starting a brewery after listening to this program. You work at an insurance company as well and have found a niche, I understand, in helping breweries get insurance. How does that work? Is that any different than another business?
Sure. You know, I think there's some nuances with the breweries that need to be addressed and make sure that you have somebody that's got some understanding in that. We do have an insurance agency, McKay Insurance, and that was kind of what started us being able to open a brewery. We had a building across the street and decided to make that investment in our town and create some excitement and hopefully spur some other businesses and spur people to come and be tourists or maybe even relocate there. And so because we're very good at insurance, and now we've learned very quickly in the brewing business, I think we've got a unique perspective to be able to see that. You know, some things that are maybe a little different than some industries, especially right now, is that, you know, if you did have a major loss in your brewery, going out to the market and getting new equipment is going to be very there's a long time frame because there are so many breweries opening. People are having to wait much longer than they have in the past. The market for used equipment, I think, is, you know, A, very expensive, and B, pretty scarce because, again, there's so many people out in the market doing that. We're starting to see regulations come through on the FDA. They haven't really done a whole lot, but if there were recalls, those sorts of things, how are you going to handle that and make sure you can cash flow and stay in operation if you would need to have a large recall of your product? Of course, you've got the liquor liability issues that are a little different than some manufacturers. And then, you know, we really, breweries, even a brewery like ourselves where we don't have a full brew pub, we've got that tap room restaurant type exposure. And then we also have the manufacturing brewery exposure. And then you've got the products liability exposure. So it is a pretty complex business.
Eric Sorensen, Vice President and Treasurer of the Iowa Brewers Guild, do you see anything unique in the growth of beer in Iowa in the last few years when we compare it to other states?
I'm not sure if it's truly unique. I know that we've been a little quicker to jump on some of the trends, so we're seeing more breweries start up open to canning as opposed to just going with bottles.
What is the difference there when you're a brewery and you're trying to choose between bottling or canning? What difference does it make?
The cost of canning equipment has gone down with some of the smaller scale canning units. The quality of the units is better than it's ever been before, so you're able to get a good product. Because cans are able to be taken into more markets, you're able to sell more where you wouldn't be otherwise. However, cans represent, you know, a small portion of total beer sales, but the willingness to embrace this as a new outlet for craft beers, where craft beers originally started just in bottles, is one of the things that we're seeing in the state.
Let me end this program by throwing out a bit of a question that I have, beer trivia. I don't know who can answer this, but I heard, and I would like to know if there's any truth to the claim that, according to archaeological evidence, beer making may predate bread making. Does anybody know about that? Jump in if you do. Bill Heinrich.
Yeah, I've seen some reports, unsubstantiated reports, I guess, just in a few brewing texts about, I believe, Sumerian archaeological evidence of brewing, and also some interesting data on the genetics of bread yeast versus brewer's yeast. And I think there were some scientists who believe that the bread yeast was cultivated from brewer's yeast.
And very quickly, Megan, where do you see the growth going here? Will the growth continue for many years, or have we sort of saturated the market?
I certainly don't think we've saturated the market. As I mentioned earlier, in Iowa, craft beer sales, and not just Iowa Brewery craft beer, but any craft beer in the state is only at 2% market share. I think there's a lot of education and a lot of room for growth. I think we're also seeing a lot of great tourism come into the state because of the craft breweries that are popping up. This is one of the most fraternal industries that I've ever been a part of. We work together to really promote and grow our businesses, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon. So I think a lot of room forward.
Megan McKay-Ziller, thank you. Eric Sorensen, Bill Heinrich, thank you. And also Arian Schussler, thank you all for joining us for this hour.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan, and the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's Talk of Iowa and River to River. This program is Jeff Schmidt. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.